Well, we've all heard the expression, I think, he's a man of his word, or she's a woman of her word, right? And at least for me, I think it's a good thing. It's a compliment. It typically means that you can count on that person. If they say they're going to do something, if they've committed to doing something, you can depend on them. You can trust them. They're reliable. It's a good thing. And you might think at first glance that when you see today's talk title is Be Impeccable With Your Word, that it would have something to do with that, you know, being trustworthy and dependable. But it can be a whole lot more, a whole lot more. There's a little book that I absolutely love called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And there's a wonderful story in there. It's about a mother and her little girl. And it seems that the mother was having one of those days at work. You've had them, just nothing went right. It was stretched out forever. She thought it would never be finished. Things just kept going wrong. And on top of that, she had a blinding, pounding headache. So she made it home, and her little girl was having the reverse. She was having a wonderful day. She was playing, and she was happy and just filled with joy, and she was singing, just expressing all this joy that she was feeling and experiencing in her play. She didn't notice that her mom wasn't feeling well. In her joy, she kept singing louder. You know, she just was so exuberant. Well, the noise was, finally it got to the mom snapped, and she yelled out. She said, "Can't you just shut up? Your voice is ugly. Shut up." And the little girl did. She stopped singing, and in days ahead, when she would go to school, she stopped participating in the singing there. And it even got so that she really didn't use her voice very much. Not like she became much quieter. Her mother said, "Your voice is ugly." And she took that in, and she believed it. I'm sure the mom didn't mean it. It blurted out. The little girl heard it. It was a thought that just came out, and the little girl grabbed onto it and made it true. She believed it. She accepted it. In Unity, we talk a lot about our thoughts, and then therefore our words, but especially our thoughts. Our third basic principle is the law of mind action, and it is that whatever we hold in our minds is most likely to outpicture in our experience, in our world. And so that little girl heard the thought, "Your voice is ugly," and it stayed there. And then the outpicturing of her life was, she just didn't express it. She just stuffed it, which is very sad, very sad. One of the reasons I like this little book so much is because I look at it as sort of a how-to better do the third basic principle, this law of mind action, how to better identify those things in our thinking that we don't want to keep there, that we want to change or remove. I think it's a wonderful way to do that. Who has read The Four Agreements? Most of you have. Yes, I believe that Reverend Lee did a series on it too. So today you get my perspective on it. I just think it's amazing. Don Miguel Ruiz, and I had the pleasure of seeing him and his son, Don Carlos Ruiz. They were here in St. Louis some years back. And I think it was somewhere around Central West End. I don't know. It was right around the time that the Fifth Agreement came out that they had co-authored. And so it was wonderful to see them and hear them both speak as they were reminiscing about all these things. But these four agreements are so very powerful. In the beginning of the book, Don Miguel talks, he lays groundwork for us. So one of the very first premises that he explains is that language is our way of, our code, our way of communicating. And you go, well, yeah. But if you think about language, that's how, I mean, we're born and we don't have any control over who our parents are. We don't have any control over what our name becomes. We don't have any control over what language is being spoken. You know, it's just, we're in it. So we begin to learn it. And so that is the way of beginning to communicate, to be able to understand one another. So there's language. Agreements come into play, like the little girl. She heard something and accepted it. When these words that we're using to communicate with each other, when they, when a caregiver, a parent, a grandparent, a school teacher, anyone that is known and trusted, when a person like that says something to a child, it's very likely that the child is going to hear that, and then if they accept that as true, it becomes what Ruiz calls an agreement or a belief. Or a belief. We have probably all had experiences like the mother and child. We all came up with parents who were doing the very best that they could. You know, I did the very best I could with my son, but if I had it to do over again, I would be so much better. So much better. But we talk to our children, we talk to our grandchildren, and the things that we say can be accepted in that for that child. If they hear it and they accept it as true, it becomes an agreement. And we all have tons of agreements that we have embodied. It's difficult, I think, to distinguish between when we're talking about changing our thoughts, like, okay, well, but it's tough to find those things that we just accept as true. And bring those out as something that I could possibly change. You know, it's just like, well, that just is. But maybe it's not. Maybe it's not true. So, that's what an agreement is. Ruiz talks about domestication of humans. I got kind of tickled with his terminology. You know that I have dogs, and the dog that most recently passed, Emily, had two rounds of obedience class, you know. So we did beginner obedience class and then intermediate obedience class. So that, and really, the one who's being trained is the owner. You know, I guess if you've ever been through one, then you know. Then you learn how you're supposed to do things. Anyway, and Katie, the one I still have, has been through beginner obedience training. Interestingly, domestication of humans is not all that different from training a dog, or, well, you don't train cats. They're not trainable, really, I don't think. But dogs. And in domestication of humans, it's largely based on the rewards and punishment system. And, you know, for dogs that you treat, you know, you try to catch them doing something right. Same with kids. You know, catch them doing something right and you reward them. Maybe a smile or a good girl, good boy kind of thing. And then if they don't do what you want them to do, then there's a consequence. It can be something very mild, to from a frown to being yelled at, or even stiffer, you know, punishment, sit and stand in the corner or grounded, or, you know, whatever it is. So rewards and punishments. And, you know, in a large degree, that's all fine. You know, we've all kind of been through that, and we have to teach our children not to run in the street. We have to teach our children certain things. So it's not all bad. The thing is that when we are doing that, there's a danger. The danger is that the child, the person, begins to think that they can't be who they really are. The little girl stopped singing. So if there is some part of us that isn't acceptable, whether it be our singing or acting a certain way, then we have to suppress that. Carl Jung calls that the shadow self, that we have all these excluded parts that we just don't pay attention to anymore because they're not acceptable, we think. We've agreed to that. So we become actors in many ways. So we can't really be who we are. And that's the sad part, the downside of the domestication of humans. Well, like the little girl, what we notice about what she took as an agreement, and that my voice is ugly, wasn't true. And often that we have a lot of that kind of thing too. It's not true. So what we can do, and with the help of this little book, what we can do then is begin to try to find those things that may be keeping us from being the very best that we can be, that may be keeping us from expressing ourselves in better ways, in more real and authentic ways, in more powerful ways. And I think this little book can help us do that. In breaking old agreements, what we need to know is that it is very scary to do that. It takes great courage to try to break some of these old agreements. And that makes sense if you think about it, because when we are children, if we displease our parents, then we risk rejection, we risk receiving their love. So some of these things that have been accepted go very deep. And if we are going to start looking at them, then that old fear comes up. If we did try to sing, it's really scary to do that because for so long we have believed that we're not okay if we do that. So it takes great courage to challenge those old ideas. But what he says is that if you are willing and able to incorporate these four agreements that we're going to talk about today and over the next 3 weeks, if you're willing to do that, you will create enough personal power that you'll be able to break quite a few of those old agreements. They'll just start coming up. You'll be able to see them, and you'll be able to break them. So that's the groundwork. That's what we're going to be doing. And like I say, there are four. Today, as we've already mentioned, today is be impeccable with your word. The word is very, very powerful. You know, there's that old saying, I think I've said it before from up here, that expression, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Not true. You know, words can really hurt. They really can. The story of the mother and the little girl, those words hurt deeply. Words have great power, and so it is up to us to choose how we're going to use our words. Being impeccable with our word is what he's asking us to consider doing. When you think about the word impeccable, if you go to the dictionary, it says that impeccable means faultless, not liable to sin, incapable of sin. Incapable of sin. Now, in Unity, that definition is what Ruiz works on in his book. In Unity, we talk about sin as, it's an archery term, missing the mark. We talk about sin as being error thinking, believing that we're not good enough. You know, that's sin. That's error thinking. Be impeccable with your word. This powerful thing that we have, this word, and being impeccable is don't use it to contribute to this error thinking. So really, to be impeccable with your word means to take responsibility for your thoughts and your actions without judging or blaming yourself. Talk more. Sometimes to get a grip on what something means, it's almost easier to look at what it doesn't mean. So if we're looking at what does it mean to be impeccable with your word, what it doesn't mean is it does not mean gossip. Gossip can be so very destructive, so very destructive. Ruiz compares it to a computer virus. Some of us have been stricken with computer viruses. If you were to walk up to a group of people, a circle of people, your friends, and say you've just been through an experience with a teacher, and the teacher had harsh words for some assignment you did, and had harsh words, you know, you didn't do your best, or you could, you know, try that one again, or something, and you're upset with the teacher, you come up to your friends, and you say, "That Mr. Jones, he's such a jerk. He never listens to anything I say. He's just rude. Now you had a thought, you planted a seed, your words have been negative, very negative. And if those people, whether the people know Mr. Jones or not, if they know him, now they may be looking at him with, well, let's see, does he act like a jerk when I'm around? You know, so there's something, it changes the lens through which they look. If they don't know Mr. Jones, they now have a preset idea of what Mr. Jones is going to be like. So gossip can be just so much like a computer virus. And if any of those people, you have seen it yourself in all this politics stuff that's going on, if any of those people decide that they're going to tell their friends about Mr. Jones, what are they going to say? Well, he's a jerk. You know? We see that in politics happening, you know, in nines. It's just crazy how somebody will say something and then it explodes into all kinds of other stuff that it isn't. The other thing, so there's gossip. The other thing that being impeccable is not is being destructive in our self-talk. Have you ever listened to the way you talk to yourself? Sometimes it can be awfully negative. He says that what we do is we learn to auto-domesticate ourselves. So at some point, we don't need a parent or someone anymore to say, you know, you have an ugly voice. We do it ourselves. You know, we have internalized those voices, and then we tell ourselves how stupid we are, how clumsy we are, how, you know, I've caught myself saying, oh, that was a stupid thing to do, you know. Our self-talk can be one of the most destructive things as far as our own well-being is concerned. We just said that Jesus said that the you know, love God with all your heart, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. You know, we're supposed to love everybody, including ourselves. Think back to that little girl and imagine what it would be like if she had not accepted that as true. Maybe she would have been older, you know, like a teenager or something, and mom said that. And if sometimes teenagers can think a little more. The little children are the most sponge-like, the most likely to just take it in. But by the time they get to teenage years, she might have the ability to look at her mom and see the pain and know mom's having a bad day and she's feeling bad, and not take that as truth. And in that case, she'll continue to sing. She will be able to, she won't hide that part of herself, her voice, as something that is not desirable. She'll keep on doing it. She would be much happier because she would get to express the way she wants to with her voice, and she would be able to be herself. What about us? One little story about one something that a mother said, and it could conceivably change this child. What about us? What have we heard? What have we accepted as truth? What agreements are in there about us that may be keeping us from expressing joyfully, from being our real selves? What might we have in there? Wouldn't you like to really be yourself? Wouldn't you like to live without fear of not being accepted or loved? Or what that question really says is, how can we break those old destructive agreements? I think there's several things that we can do. First is, if we want to decide we're going to try these four agreements, if it's true, then we can really begin to change our thinking, those thoughts that are really embedded. If we want to accept that, then the first thing we need to do is we need to decide that we are going to be impeccable with our word, that we are going to use our words constructively, lovingly, supportively. We are not going to contribute to any negativity with our words. So first is a decision. You always have to be willing to do it. And then the second thing is monitor. once you've made that decision, you know, it's like learning how to do something. Until it becomes second nature, you have to, there has to be a monitoring. So you set up your observer self and you begin to watch for what I'm about to say. And if I'm about to say something that is negative, then I can either change it or silence myself. I've mentioned before, I come from a family that has used in the past put-down humor. And I used to think it was funny and sarcastic kinds of things, and I don't do it anymore because I think it can be hurtful, and I don't want to take the chance, you know, of it. So I can just be silent. I can think about what I'm going to say. That mother, if she could have just been monitoring what she was about to say, she might. You can still get your point across. The third point after deciding and monitoring and then choosing whether to say something differently or be silent. This last one is be sincere. The mother didn't mean that. I know she didn't mean that she believed that her daughter had an ugly voice. She wouldn't have said that. She didn't mean that. If she had been a little more in touch with what was really going on with her, she might well have said, you know, I am really hurting right now. My head hurts terribly, and I would like for you, if you would, go outside and sing, or go to your room and sing, or just sing quietly. I'm glad you're singing, but it's making my head hurt more. She can ask for what she needs and wants without making it be destructive at all. So when we're monitoring and we're about to say something, think about, is there a way I can say this that isn't going to be negative? I'm not going to use the word critical because there is a term called constructive criticism, and I do think sometimes that saying things to people to help them improve something is not a bad thing, but real care needs to be taken with how it's done, you know, and all that sort of thing. But I will say constructive, supportive, loving, constructive uses of your word are what we want to do. And the sincere part, the last thing then, is this isn't to say that you always want and need to be nice. You know, that was one of my things, that when I was growing up, I always had to be nice. No matter if somebody was poking my eye, I'd be nice. Okay. So I'm not saying that, because we do need to stand up for ourselves. But you don't have to do it in hateful ways. You can remove yourself. You can be assertive. It needs to be sincere. So anything that you're saying to another person, you know, you're not saying it just to be nice. You're saying it to be supportive. Just being supportive. Be real. Be authentic. So then, if we take all of this and we begin to imagine what it would be like for just a moment if every person that you met only spoke in supportive, positive ways to you. Can you imagine that? So if somebody came up to you and says, I want to talk to you about something, rather than going, what? Have you ever had that? I'd like to speak to you about something. Well, okay. Instead of that, if you always knew they were going to be supportive and positive, you'd go, what? Okay. Imagine if that were the reality. And imagine if you only spoke supportive, constructive, positive things. How good that would feel for you. Imagine what our experience of the world would be if we were doing that, if others were doing that. It's like the world needs all the good that we can do. We have a choice. What is ours to do? It is a choice. We can choose. We can choose. And I suggest that we choose to be impeccable with our word. God bless. Let's take a moment now to, as we do each week, to practice the presence. So I invite you to gently close your outer eyes if that's comfortable for you. to become comfortable in your seat. Let yourself relax completely. Know that you are here, you are safe, all is well. Sometimes we do a mental scan, so I suggest that you kind of mentally start at the top of your head and scan your body for places where you may be holding tightness, your face, or your neck, or your shoulders, and consciously relax them, let them go. Move all the way down your body, relaxing every place that is holding tension. Our bodies become more and more relaxed. And then to turn our attention inward to release the outer, if you will. Often we turn our attention, our focus on our breath, our breathing. This also helps us to still our minds. So we become aware of the breath, how it feels as it comes through either our noses or our mouths, and how it feels when it leaves our bodies. We breathe in deeply, and we exhale. Allow yourself to continue to breathe slowly and deeply for several breaths. Notice your body relaxing even more. We are instructed by our master teacher, Jesus, to go into the silence, to talk to what he says, our Father, to speak to God, to become at one with our Creator, that all that is. And it is in the silence that we can put ourselves in alignment with that. That indwelling Christ, that indwelling divinity that is in every person, waits for us to become silent, to shift into a space of openness and willingness, willing to listen, to be receptive to what God has for us. When we do this on a regular basis, when we go to this quiet, relaxed place, when we still our bodies and our minds, we are much more likely to be receptive, to be open, to be able to hear and experience what Spirit has for us. We are better able to receive guidance. It is said that God works in his currency is divine ideas. So if God's currency is divine ideas, then when we are open and quiet and still, we open our minds so that those divine ideas can come into us, so that we can pick them up. It is in the stillness that we can be soothed. If we have had difficult days like the mother in our story, if we have had challenges that we're trying to work through in our lives, if we have received news that is challenging, we can come to this place of quiet and receive comfort and strength. Jesus talks about the peace that passes understanding. We experience that peace when we become truly still. There begins to be just a sense of all is well in my world, regardless of the outer world. That peace fills us. We very likely then might begin to feel a bubbling up of love. Because it is in this quiet, in this stillness, that we experience, we can feel it, love. God is love. And we connect with that love when we are in the silence. And so now we allow ourselves to feel this love. We can feel love often as sort of a swelling. It just begins to feel like love is expanding in us, filling our entire bodies. Love doesn't have to be stopped by skin either. Love can continue to expand and grow. And we imagine that now. We see that love as we can feel it in our bodies expanding and growing. We know that it can just move right on through our skin. It joins with the love that is growing in the person sitting next to us. And in this whole sanctuary, love begins to fill this room. Love has a higher vibration. One of the things that we can do in this world is to be love in expression. It is love that allows us to see through different eyes, to see through loving eyes. It is love that allows us to hear what is on another person's heart and maybe not pay as much attention to the actual words. It is love that this world needs. As we do each week, we set aside time just to be silent, to sit and just experience our oneness, experience the peace, experience the love in the silence. We can choose to be love in expression. We can choose to use our words lovingly, to be impeccable with our words. This world could use our loving words. We can use loving words. And so as we begin to bring this time to a close, we bring with us the peace, the love, the joy, and the awareness that we can do this, we can have this connection at any time. We come back with hearts filled with gratitude for the knowledge that we are creations of the Most High, that we are so truly loved, grateful, and blessed. Let us conclude our experience by together repeating, affirming our Lord's Prayer.